Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and have quite a bit of news this week, I guess, for any of you that were paying attention to the Fed. They've raised the rates again, 0.25, and kind of hinted that they may be done for a while, which I don't know about that. I have a feeling that they won't be done for a long while, but maybe they're going to pause at least the rapid rate hikes. Dan, are you with us today?
I'm here.
Hey, outstanding. And let's see, I guess we've already played the disclaimer, although pre-recorded. So let me just say quickly that you're going to hear certain strategies, perhaps, certain new concepts, tax planning-wise, et cetera, today. We hope you learned something new. Please don't run out and try to implement these right away, and especially don't run out, try to implement them, and then call us later and explain what you did and how we could have messed that up so badly if that were to occur. Because we typically try to learn enough, don't we, Dan, on the front end to avoid those bad outcomes. But that's what will happen, and it is unfortunate because the answer to almost every question we're asked is maybe. Right, Dan?
Many times it's a maybe. We need to discuss, find further details possibly.
We've got a mechanism to do that. It's on our website at baplanner.com. That's baplanner.com. And there's a link at the top right called Intake Forms. And if you will follow that link to a page that has four different forms on it, and if you'll fill those out, we'll have enough information we need to get started. As we were discussing earlier, getting ready for the show, Dan, the debt ceiling is probably the big news this week. You want to catch us up on what transpired, I guess, late last night?
Well, I just read this morning that they do have a deal that McCarthy's taken to the House to write. He's supposed to deliver and give the House 72 hours. Now we got 3 days to read these, 500 pages,
yeah.
6,000 pages, or whatever it is, of deal.
We don't actually have to pass it to be able to read it. Is that what you're saying, Dan? That's pretty
well,
amazing.
In this case, he says he is. So that's, but he's giving them only 3 days to do so. But that's just getting it right down to the wire again.
Well, but, apparently Yellen also has confirmed that we really have a little longer than what they thought. Surprise, surprise. And by the way, I'm not sure why a little old thing like the debt ceiling, the legal limit of what we're supposed to be able to borrow to spend, would slow these guys down, right? I mean, seriously.
It would only slow them down to decide whether they're going, who they're going to pay. Are they going to pay grandma or are they going to pay some fat cat? That's the deal.
Well, I don't know, but I don't like, and I think some others, I noticed Chip Roy isn't real happy about the latest version of the spending reduction levels.
Well, frankly, he's never going to be happy until it's in control. I mean, that's just his modus operandi, I believe. He's going to be aggressive with it, and somebody's got to be. Somebody's got to lead the pack, and I think he's there.
Well, I'll tell you this. I get a kick. Well, I don't get a kick because it's serious, but I find it interesting that there's so much talk about, well, how can we harm the American people, the economy? You just go down the list on all the scare tactics that are used by those that are insisting on a, quote, clean debt ceiling bill. And they don't seem to think that a $32 trillion deficit, really more like $132 trillion, they don't think that does the same thing. It's like, you know, a death by a thousand cuts, essentially, right? And I just find it remarkable at times that they look the other way when they look at the damage that, that's caused. And I tell you, the world's a different place today, and we better start acting like we may have some more multiple billion-dollar skirmishes. I, you know, do you call it a war if it was never authorized by Congress? Is that a war? I'm not sure what we call it. A conflict? Is that what those
are
called?
Yeah, that's what we call the ones that are not declared. We call them conflicts.
Right. Well, you know, I forget what we're up to on the Ukraine support that we've provided. It's obviously more than a few billion at this point. You know the number, Dan? I've seen various numbers bannered about.
I do not know the number, but somebody mentioned that we may have overstated it by $3 billion.
Well, so what's a few billion?
It depends on whose pocket you're talking about, I think.
Yeah. Well, the bigger issue, I think, is that it's got hardly any strings attached in terms of accountability, from what I can read. And I just find that remarkable. I mean, it's just remarkable how easily the folks in Washington will spend our money without there being any hard, I mean hard, accountability for all that money ends up. I mean, you're talking about one of the most corrupt economies and countries ever. From what I've read, I mean, I guess those could be adjectives that aren't necessarily true, but it's bad. I mean, the level of corruption is bad. For Joe Biden to think it was bad, not what, 6 years ago, you know, it'd have to be pretty bad. But anyway, so let's see, what else is news? Well, speaking of the debt ceiling, I noticed where at least one or maybe a couple of the debt rating agencies were making noises this week, but I don't think I saw where any of them actually took action to reassess the U.S.'s debt rating. And I guess I would say I'd make a similar comment. If $32 trillion deficits cumulatively, real ones, don't bother them, why does going down to the wire on extending the debt ceiling deal bother them, right?
Yeah, but, you know, the debt guys, the debt raters, are just saber-rattling. You know, there's one major one, I can't remember the name, Nathan, but it was talking about this week. He said, man, this is just going to be horrible. And then, of course, rates moved up on the short term. The T-bill rates were at one point, 1 month T-bill rates were at 6%, over 6% at one point this week. Maybe it closed at that. I mean, it's a very high rate. I mean, it is inverted right now. You know, short term are higher than the longer term rates. It's really quite intriguing from an investor standpoint. You know, what does he put his money into? It's upside down right now is what they call it, inverted, you know, as far as the long term to the short term rate. So we need to get it straightened out. It needs to come to a conclusion. It's going to be a compromise. There's no doubt. And everybody doesn't get what they wanted, but something's got to happen. Yeah. It's got to get straightened out.
Well,
so we stop talking about it and get on with the world.
Yeah. Speaking of inverted, how about those Celtics? Did you catch any of that game last night? They're forcing a game seven after everybody, including the, you know, ESPN and Fox, all the prognosticators had written them off back when it was 3-0, right? They were down 3-0. And, you know, has anybody ever there's nobody in the history of the NBA has ever won a playoff series after being down 0-3. That's going to be amazing if they pull that off. But anyway, okay, well, we didn't sign up to talk about basketball, but as I was scrolling the news, it's like, man, how can you not? Of course, they're not done yet, but anyway, it's a
– I think that's worth mentioning. That's a big deal.
It's like Ukraine versus Russia, and it looks like there might be a game 7 in that fight as well, right? A little counteroffensive getting ready to take place. By the way, as part of the debt ceiling, if I remember right, we agreed, or they're agreeing, the parties, to keep military spending. Let's see, are we keeping it the same or are we actually increasing it a bit? I've seen different assessments on that.
Now, it's going to be its own little package, I believe. It'll stay out there. It's got to stay strong. There's no doubt about that. We can't stop that spending.
Well, I would agree, but I would also think, don't we at some point get the benefit of some technological advances? Aren't drones effectively, some of them are cheaper than soldiers and airplanes
and pilots.
Other stuff? Yeah, I mean, I know they're not free, but I also know, if I'm not mistaken, some of the more effective short-range drones are, I don't know, in the hundreds of thousands, not millions, right? And it may be low hundreds. And I don't know. But I'm all for a strong military because, I mean, if you're looking around, a lot of people, a lot of knowledgeable military, ex-military, I don't know about the current ones, they probably can't talk, but they think we're very soon to have a conflict, you know, with the Taiwan area, I guess you might call it.
And
it really is. And of course that could involve a North Korea scenario as well, and they're making noises about their nukes, which is kind of scary. That's really scary. I would suggest, I would say that China actually has something to lose when it comes to the relationship with the U.S. I don't know that North Korea does, right? We're not really giving them much anymore. But anyway, okay, well, let's talk about the world of real estate. And it looks like, from all the news we had this past week, several major projects announced. I don't know. I guess, you know, we've had some defaults in the recent past. You know, Dan, we talked offline about the big Houston syndicator that had 3,200 units foreclosed on, and apparently there's another 1,000-unit property that just this past week with that group was foreclosed on. And I think, you know, those kind of hit close to home, and they're in the news enough to where we are, you know, thinking the whole world's like that, and yet it's not. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on out there, and, you know, it's interesting to look at all the loans that are happening at rates that work, you know, cap rates that make people money, and across multiple segments. I saw a couple industrial or light industrial projects announced this week, several multifamily, big dollar type multifamily projects. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, when you look at, and part of what we look at, obviously, is we take these deals apart for our clients when they're interested in investing in them, is we're looking at not just focused on individual factors like cap rates, equity multiples, IRRs, et cetera. You got to step back occasionally and look at the forest. And one thing I noticed with this particular syndicator that got into trouble, I mean, first of all, these were massive projects in terms of number of units. And it's not that it was just the number of units, but part of the issue, as I see it, Dan, and I don't know, I've been looking at these deals for 20 years now, 20 plus years. When I see things purchased at the bottom of the price continuum, it always gives me pause. And I'm not suggesting that just because you spend $300,000, or what was the deal we looked at, or just tangentially, I think it was a news article a week ago. What was it, Dan? It was $700,000 a door.
Yeah, over $700,000, almost $800,000 per unit you're talking about.
Yeah, that doesn't ensure success. In fact, that might actually be as bad as buying a unit for $70,000, depending on where it's at, depending on what the rents are, depending on the synergy with other projects that might be in the neighborhood, you know, if the same syndicator owns. That deal is a Brooklyn, New York-based deal. It's a totally different market than say, a Phoenix or even a San Francisco deal. Yeah, but bottom line is, even in Houston, Texas, when you pay $70,000 for a unit in the not-too-distant past, and they're the types of class properties they are, these couldn't have been better than a Class C, I don't think. First of all, the basic model that help us make money, we're going to talk about how do we make money in real estate apartment syndications, because the industry's taken a bad rap here in the last month or so. I would suggest, specifically referring to a Wall Street Journal article about Texas syndications. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's important to understand what's the difference between a multifamily project and, say, a single-family rental, because I know a lot of our listeners are doing single-family rentals and don't really think about multifamily that much, or maybe don't even understand why it's different until they wake up someday and they're in their 50s. And all of a sudden, you know, that multifamily way of making money starts to make a lot more sense, right? And so let's do this. Let's take a break, and then we'll return, and we'll talk about what is the difference between how we make money in the multifamily space versus single family. And I think you'll understand why maybe the news articles don't quite – they must have been written by some single family rental folks, is I think what I might surmise based on how they overlook a few key factors. Anyway, we'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan Dubose, CPA, here in a few minutes.
Because I am a seeker, and you are a keeper. You are a leader, won't you show me the way?
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. pigeons, and there are many just like me
with big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment. Or no, it's not the final segment. It's the second segment of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I'm just here with my my guest, Dan DuBose, CPA. And we've been talking debt ceiling. And I ended that last segment with a mention about some current articles. Specifically, there was a Wall Street Journal article. Actually, I think there's been two in the past week or so. And they talk about the concept of an investor doubling their money in 3 to 5 years is like, you know, that's just the hokiest idea I've ever heard. And, you know, what that tells me is that the author has absolutely no experience with multifamily investing and understand that that's exactly what can happen. I've watched it. I've participated in it for quite a while. And I'll just tell you what may surprise them, and it may surprise some of our listeners, and it's why I suggest the natural progression of a real estate investor is typically to start with single family. Wouldn't you say, Dan? I mean, do you see that with the clients you work with as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, certainly the single family is, in my case, is the majority of the investors. It seems there's maybe one house, maybe 20 houses. It may be
the house they lived in before they moved to Houston, or they moved away from Houston and they decided to hang on to it and rent it. It may be a condo in Austin or College Station where their children were going to university, and they decided, hey, it's already gone up in value in the last 4 years. Why not hang on to it, rent it? They kind of get started, and then, you know, they hear radio shows and other mediums and decide, well, this has been pretty good so far. Let's go another one. And before you know it, they may have four or five. They may even have one of the spouses qualifying as a real estate professional because of the significant tax benefits that can result. And they stay in that single family world. And, you know, the positives with single family is that they can make money. There's no question they can make money. However, the way it's made, the math and metrics involved, totally different than the way we make money in multifamily investments. And, you know, with single family, Dan, I don't care how well someone runs a single family rental. It matters not when you go to sell it, typically how much rental income you're making. I mean, it can impact it a little bit perhaps, but what matters when you go to sell that home, Dan, what's the single biggest restriction on how much you're going to sell it for, or the cap, let's say? Is it the current cap rate? Is it, you know, anything we look at, like internal rate of return with multifamily? Is it the
market?
That's right. And all that means is what your neighbor sell their home for 2 months ago or 2 weeks ago, as the case may be, in your neighborhood. That's your limit on how much per foot. You should always break things into, in real estate, the real estate world, we think about price per feet, or if you're overseas, price per meter. You know, that's the common delineator that you can compare properties. And a lot of Mr. and Ms. Homeowner types are going to say, well, wait a minute, doesn't it matter if it's got a swimming pool or a putting green, you know, in the backyard, or it's got a membership with the country club? Yeah, those are small intangibles that might tweak value. Maybe not. May tweak it downward. You know, have you ever had a swimming pool, Dan? Well, you actually do have a swimming pool, right?
Yeah.
And well, I was going to say, the swimming pools are kind of like, as I used to say, as one that used to have a lake property with the complement of boats, the Sea-Doos, etc. those are things that you want your friends to have. Swimming pools, lake houses, boats, airplanes. Those are things you want your friends to have so that you can borrow or participate. It's kind of like grandkids, I guess you might say, right? And you can give them back when you're done. And in any event, the comp, as we call it, is what dictates what you sell that single family for. Now, what dictates a multifamily transaction, Dan, is a concept we refer to, well, it's a combination of things that all work together. The net operating income of the property and the amount, the cap rate, which is the effectively the return that a buyer is going to seek to pay you whatever you think you're going to sell it for. And, of course, a lender typically has to be involved on that discussion because they're the ones that are actually going to fund a percentage. We call that a loan to equity or a loan to value, LTV. And those three elements added or combined are what dictate how much I can sell a multifamily for. So take the older class C, C minus, even D plus property that we can buy, quote, on the cheap. And even the $60,000 or $70,000 range, there's nothing wrong with that type of property if you turn it into something that's comparable to other properties in the area that have higher rents. That's the name of the game. And I've watched it so many times where a group of, you know, 100 to 150 investors will each put in their $50,000 to $100,000 or more.
With the right manager.
Well, I was just getting ready to say, with an experienced lead partner or syndicator or sponsor, those names all typically refer to the same party, that's actually been to the finish line before. And it's, I understand, you know, everybody's got to get to that first finish line. That's fine, unless it's my friend. I'm not investing with the guy that's doing or gal that's doing their first project. I'm going to hope they got enough friends and family where they can undertake that on their own. And I'm also going to suggest they need to be a passive partner before they're a lead partner so they understand how it's done. And they need to be a partner with somebody that is successful at getting to the finish line of a project where, you know, they take something that's performing under market, they amenitize it, if you want to pick a word, to get it to where they can raise the rents over the next 3 years or so, get it up to market rate rents. And when you do that, your net, all the things that we just talked about, your net operating income goes up. Therefore, the amount of money that an investor is willing to pay you will go up typically. And the bank will be willing, one, to entertain a loan. Right now, a lot of banks, unless you've got a story to tell, like, you know, we took a beat up old apartment and turned it into something beautiful, and beauty is in the eye of the tenant. You know, there's not a single piece of real estate, at least in America, that doesn't look better with a tenant in it. Would you not agree with that statement, Dan? And how do you keep tenants in them, right? You provide a product at a good rate for the amenities that you're delivering. And if those units are empty, which if you read the story in the Wall Street Journal, the stories, you're going to see, Dan, that part of the group involved, I'm not going to mention their name, they started off, I think in some cases, they bought these properties, and these were not, I'm just going to say it, these were not nice properties. These were not the kind of properties that you would live in, Mr. DeBose. And so anyway, when they were foreclosed on, the occupancy was down in the mid-50s and maybe low-60s. Well, wow. That's no way to make money in the apartment business. And if you're not,
green,
I mean, I don't.
We'll drive away a tenant pretty quick.
Say again?
a green swimming pool will drive a tenant away real
quick. That was one of the issues. Rats were there. You can read about all this in the Houston Chronicle. These were properties that our illustrious Mayor Turner even talked disparagingly about when he went out. You know, you know the ones that were in the paper recently. And not that that would in and of itself be a deal killer, but I would say it'd probably take a lot to get those kind of remarks out of Mayor Turner. But anyway, these things were not being run correctly. They probably, if we had access to their underwriting, would probably see that they weren't underwritten like a successful operator, sponsor, syndicator, lead partner, etc., would have underwritten that property to actually bring it up to market. And of course, some properties you probably can't bring up to market. And so, you know, that's I remember. Well, I don't want to get into the stories, but I'll just tell you, there's certain things you can check out in a neighborhood, certain shopping venues, as an example, like say a Walmart. That's a big name brand. My comments on the air won't hurt them, right, Dan? They'll still be doing okay. And I shop at Walmart. I just try to park uphill. Because of all the potential damage that will result from a cart on the loose, right? And in any event, just go walk around a Walmart, and you'll get a feel for whether you're going to be able to increase rates in that neighborhood 20-25%, which is probably, on average, what you need to do if you're going to fully exploit the value of an apartment building, so as a syndicator. So again, a comp sets the cap for what you're going to sell your single family rental for, and then NOI, which could happen. I've seen successful syndicators take a property, do cosmetic repairs. If you're talking about a 6 month to a year conversion, it's usually going to be fairly cosmetic, and then they may put a smart home package in, add a bark park for the dogs, maybe put up some covered parking. I mean, there's a number of things that you can do right away in addition to cutting expenses, where when you think about it, you can increase the net operating income, and in some cases significantly, but in all cases the valuation is a multiple. Tell you what, Dan, we're at the point of taking our second break. Let's go ahead and do that, and we'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost, and I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life, but I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that will tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, and Dolly, I guess, right, Dan?
I love Dolly.
She's a willing participant each and every week here on the show, and has some music that's very appropriate to what we do, I guess. Speaking of what we do, for those that are listening to the show and you've heard and seen, maybe had some friends invest in real estate private partnerships, hopefully the friends knew enough to be successful. That's the problem with these transactions. They have very complex terminology, and in most cases, laypersons don't understand what they're signing up for, which is what we do. We try to help you understand what you're signing up for in each specific opportunity to the point where you realize, oh, this isn't for me because this is going to be a 7-year or a 10-year hold. I need to get my money back in a shorter period. You may need quarterly cash flow. So you want to find transactions that maybe have a little less value add component, where, you know, value add is a type of property where we're taking something that's old and not in the best condition, doesn't have the current amenity set that a new apartment building might, and we've got a syndicator that is going to take that and renovate it, add stainless appliances, maybe wood-like flooring, maybe a bark park for the dogs, those kind of amenities, to where it's more in line with the new properties that are being put into the market. And, you know, you won't get the same level of rents as the Class A brand-new property, but, you know, you'll get closer, and it'll put more cash flow to the bottom line, thus increasing the net operating income that positions the property to be refinanced or sold at a gain. And, you know, we've seen that the 20 years that I've been reviewing transactions like the ones we talk about, and especially in the multifamily space, the concept of taking an older C-minus type building and turn it into a C-plus, which allows us to raise the rents. And it may not be exactly like the new stuff, but maybe it's got a better location. You know, I mean, the apartment buildings aren't something that you tear down after 10 years. You know, the average Class C building has probably been out there for what, Dan, 20 plus years, I would say, in most cases, sometimes 50 or 60 years on transactions. Yeah, and those properties can make a lot of money, a lot of cash flow, and have over the years. And again, we don't offer the investment. We don't sell you the investment. We don't get paid commissions on investments. We are accountants at base, real estate oriented tax CPAs. We do tax planning, of which using one's retirement funds is a big area for us. We help you access retirement funds in a tax optimal fashion, and then consult with you on assorted syndicated offerings that you might decide you like and want to invest in. And whether you're a member of one of the real estate investor platforms, we refer to them as the old school real estate investor platform, simply because in today's economy, you don't need to be a member of a real estate investor or mentor platform, because there's so many deals like the one we just mentioned that you can invest directly with that syndicator, or in that case through the crowdstreet.com platform if you're accredited. And by that I mean you've got a net worth, not counting your home, of at least $1 million. Otherwise you're limited to transactions that are offered specifically for those who may be non-accredited, or you know, have a net worth less than $1 million. Not as plentiful, but they are out there, and we try to keep up with assorted of those offerings. But in any event, if you're not already working with someone that understands how to assess what you're signing up for, by all means, go to our website at baplanner.com and complete the intake forms so that we can learn enough about your facts and circumstances to know how we can sync up with your objectives, whether it's tax planning, where we're trying to help you generate enough tax savings that you will have the funds to invest, or whether you want us to do that and you've already got retirement money or other savings that you want to put to work and these developments that can get you, or these transactions, these private partnerships that typically can generate above average rates of return. And it's amazing how well the multifamily space has done, although definitely run into some headwinds with some of the weaker operators that didn't quite assess, didn't read the tea leaves correctly, even though there were a lot of indications. And we talked about a lot of that over the last 2 years on the show. And, you know, the debt structure is so critical. And, you know, I'm not going to say it was obvious, but I'll just say that when you're looking at as many transactions as we do, it's a little more obvious than if you're just focused on the one you're trying to raise money for, although lenders do a pretty good job of saying no. Wouldn't you agree, Dan?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and sometimes that's a good thing, although I think in large measure the lenders didn't do so well this time around. And they're all out there now. I was reading another article this week where a big-time real estate developer was saying that they had talked to 100 lenders without one offer coming back before they found the money they needed. And that's, I haven't heard that kind of statement in a long time. But anyway, Dan, I wanted to see, were we done, by the way, with that second transaction?
I think so. The
Rapid City?
Yes.
Okay. And that transaction, you know, they're saying it's an A-minus class. I don't know about that. You know, 2008 is a 15-year-old property. Can that still be in the A delineation? I guess it could be if it's in the right location and it's got the right amenities, but that's kind of stretching it just a bit for what I would say is A-minus. But maybe for that area, since it's not in a huge metropolis, it would be. But in any event, you know, I guess one thing I wanted to comment about Dan, is I don't have, or I don't think we had the operating agreement on that transaction. It's not out yet, would be my guess. But I tell you what, we might as well talk about a concept that shows up in a lot of these operating agreements, and it can make a big difference in your throughput if you're the passive investor like most of our clients are. And that's the concept of whether the interim cash flows, whether it's a quarterly or it's a biannual or once a year even distribution, whether that distribution is treated for purposes of cash flow allocations as a return on capital, like a dividend, or whether it's treated as a return of your capital. And Dan, you want to talk a little bit about that, or you want me to continue on this item? Yeah. Just because it's so critical that
you
understand.
Yes, you should be talking that one.
Okay. Well, you know, we've got clients that are in transactions representing both camps, and I'm not going to tell you one is right and one is wrong. They're different, but you got to look at circumstances, and it depends on how that investment unfolds as to whether one is better than the other. The problem is you don't get to pick. The die is cast at the outset. It's already baked into the operating agreement, and I'm going to get you to think about this as if you were buying a stock and the stock had dividends, and for whatever reason, the company, let's say it's Apple, and you get a nice dividend from Apple, that they would reduce the value of that stock in your hands. That's like a foreign concept. That doesn't happen. It can't happen. And yet, in the real estate syndication arena, there's very little regulatory guidance provided on operations, because most all of these transactions that we talk about are private transactions. They register as being exempt. Actually, they don't even register. It's more of a notification that they're exempt from the SEC's registration requirements. They're offered under the crowdfunding statute, which was a fairly recent phenomenon. I think the Obama years is when the crowdfunding statute came into being, and of course there have been many rules and regulations written along the way, but generally, wouldn't you say unregulated is the right term, Dan?
It surely is at an unregulated level. Just there's rules you got to follow, but regulation, no, not to the extent when you think about what the SEC does as far as regulation is concerned. It's certainly not to that level by definition. That's the reason you do the PPM so extensively and spell out lots of details so that,
well, but
you know,
once you've done that,
know.
Yeah. But once you've done that, there's no follow-up by the SEC.
Right.
There's no mandatory.
No
this
audit.
Is the one I.
There's no audit.
Well, forget about an audit. How about just mandatory financial reporting to the investors? There's none of that. I mean, most of these syndicators do it, but it's not required. That, to me, that's amazing. And so, you know, for people that don't have experts looking over their shoulder helping analyze what reporting they do get, this can be a dicey market. It's not for the uninitiated or the faint of heart. And if you're not comfortable looking at, you know, 200 to 300 page operating agreements and understanding concepts like this return on or return of your capital when you get distributions. But anyway, this transaction, and we've only got a few minutes left here, so I'm going to try to speed through this. It reminded me of one reason why it's so critical. And this transaction has a provision that it's a 70-30 split to the passive investor. There's actually two different options. If you're putting $100,000 to $500,000 in, and that's the one I'm going to focus on, it's a 70-30 split. The syndicator gets 70% of the distributions that occur up to a 16% internal rate of return, and then the passives get 30. Or I'm sorry, I said that backwards. The passives get the 70%. The syndicator or sponsor, the lead partner, in other words, gets 30. And then anything above that 16% internal rate of return, they split 50-50. 50-50, Dan. Think about that. And so if you've got a $100,000 investment and you've been given distributions along the way, and maybe you did a refinance and got the bulk of your money back, which is all wonderful. When you get to the disposition, the syndicator has already returned likely that 16% IRR, and that means that they've got a much bigger chunk than they would had that deal been accounted for as a return of your or on your investment, and you still had the investment hanging around, it would get a higher share of that split, assuming they're doing allocations in a way that comports with most people's idea of partnerships. And that can be a big difference. Again, it's not to say one's right, one's wrong. You have to know the details, the forward-looking details, before you'll be able to say, hey, I got the short end of the stick, or I didn't. And I would suggest to you that you try to find transactions that are styled under a return on your capital as opposed to of your capital. I just think the odds are higher you're going to come out with more cash. Would you agree, Dan?
Yes, I would, because it's an ongoing thing. If it's a return on rather than return of, if you miss that original projected date of getting out of the deal, you're still going on with it, so you're going to get the return on the capital continuing.
Well, that's true. And of course, these are all, this is like one issue out of seven or eight major components. And as an example, there's an 8% preferred distribution going to these same passive partners, which means it goes in front. I believe, again, we don't have the operating agreement to confirm this. You always want to dig in on that operating agreement and make sure you understand what you're signing up for, because that agreement will have a provision in it that excludes anything else you may have looked at, communicated with, etc. The operating agreement controls. Okay, I hear the music. It's time to sign off. Enjoyed the show once again. Thanks, Dan, for your able assistance. And we'll look forward to next week with more of the Be a Planner show. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.